Face front, true believers! Today we're reviewing the third of four attempts to get a Marvel RPG up and running, all with varying degrees of success. In most cases, that's a nice way to say incredible degrees of failure. And all wildly different in tone and style from game to game. It's Marvel Universe Roleplaying today, the 2003 Diceless System, published by none other than the distinguished Marvel Comics themselves. So strap in, ditch your dice, and let's make ours Marvel today on System Mastery. Enough said. Hey everybody, welcome to System Mastery, the podcast where we... I don't know, beat a dead horse or something. I didn't say that in the intro this time, so don't worry about it. Here it is just for you. From God, me, Jeff.
Damn it. That's our tagline and everything.
I was working in Marvel taglines. I know you were out dumping, but yeah. I was busy saying, like, you know, face front true believers and nuff said, that kind of shit.
Well, I hope you threw an Excelsior in there.
I was saving it for you. I was going to give you the Excelsior. I did make mine Marvel, Nuff Said, and Face Front True Believers. Did you want the Excelsior?
Well, I already gave it.
Okay, good. Then we're all set. I'm Jeff, and that's John. Hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. I know last night you and I were doing some prep work for an unrelated, gig that you and I have, I guess we can call it. And we were playing the hell out of some good old-fashioned Sentinels of the Multiverse, the card game.
Oh, yeah. Love that stuff. Love some superhero stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we basically got a theme going on since last time we did some real garbage superhero stuff. That was, you know, based on a very indie property. But now we're going full mainstream.
Yeah, one of the two big deal ones, the major publishers. The Distinguished Competition. There, I got that one in, too. And that means that we're going to be doing a Marvel game today. Now, one of the little bits of weird story history for System Mastery is that we actually recorded a pilot episode. You remember when we did that, John? It was like 7 years ago.
Yeah, remember that? When we recorded the same pilot like four times?
Yeah, and we kept trying to figure out ways to record at the same time because we didn't really just Google it. So there was a point where you had a laptop and I had a PC and we both were recording on two different gaming headsets in the same room.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were dumb times. But the game that we were reviewing was the original, the first Marvel role-playing game. I think it's called, what, Marvel Superheroes Role-Playing? The TSR one? The first
mm-hmm.
TSR one.
Mm-hmm.
Which, it was an unusable review. Like, we spent the entire time trying to, like, establish our bona fides. Also, we both talked like this at all times. It was very important that we enunciated each one of our words correctly, or people would not take us seriously. So that's why you've never heard it, and you never will.
That's right.
Yeah. But before we get started, we actually have a couple of announcement masteries, as we often do these days, especially these days, for the next couple, month and a half, because in January, we are going to raise that price. Right now, it's $50, and we will read your announcement on the air as long as it's a couple minutes long and it's easy for us to get at. And you can do that by going to our website, SystemMasteryPodcast.com, and clicking the Give Us Some Money button. Just follow the process from there. So a lot of folks are buying their ads now, and you can buy them in advance. I'm not going to stop you.
That's, and John, you can do whatever either. You want.
Yeah, buy a bunch of them. Bank them. Several people have. We actually have a lot of banked ads now. It's great. Good business for us. But get them in quick, because that's going to change prices at the dawn of the new year. But John, yeah, I know you have one to read. Why don't you take us out first today?
Sure thing. Hi, everyone. Do you like podcasts? Want to do like I did? Try Sid, get fucked up, worse than my life is? Sorry, I'm sorry. I M&M'd this one real hard right out the gate.
I know, there's vomit on my sweater already.
Hi, everyone. Do you like podcasts about tabletop role-playing games? Do you like friendship and wholesomeness? Do you like to listen to two longtime friends joke around and share opinions? Of course you do. Otherwise, how would you be hearing this message right now? Join Adam and Andrew on the Inspiration Point podcast. We talk about game design, attitudes at the table, and how you can use the power of love to make your experience all the more magical. Each week, we cover a pair of topics which include things like rule of cool, harnessing fear in games, DM appreciation, immersion, dialogue, and many others. We bring both a DM and player's perspective to these topics to help our listeners run or play their best game yet. You can check us out on inspirationpoint.buzzsprout.com. Or look us up on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or really anywhere else you're going to find a podcast. Support our brand new Patreon at patreon.com/inspirationpoint to become a part of our community and perhaps join a 5e campaign. You can also check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/inspirationpointpodcast and join the community there. So look us up on your favorite podcast platform while you're driving, doing chores, getting your steps in, or doing whatever it is you do while listening to podcasts. Inspiration Point, the secret ingredient, is love.
I gotta give them some credit. Inspiration Point is a really good name for a podcast. That's great. Also, they've got that both host name alliteration thing going on that I appreciate.
Oh yeah, you gotta have that, or else it's just garbage.
Yeah, it falls right apart if you can't do that. That's why we still have Expounded Universe and Never Tell Me the Pods Collapsed, because they've got different first letters on their names.
Yeah, also that would be assonance, not alliteration, but that's fine.
Oh, you would be assonance.
I need some better assonance glasses.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to checking it out. And now I have one to read as well. And here I go. This is... The Bolt RPG engine is the result of listening to a bunch of System Mastery episodes, that can't be good, on Tragic Heartbreakers and going, RIP to them, but I'm different. Bolt is a fast, intense action RPG that's built from the ground up to be hacked and homebrewed. It's got the long list of skills, dangerous combat, and specific rule sets hand-waved away that you'd want from an old-school RPG, merged with modern tricks like a twin-axis resolution system, diceless action economy, and a stat dedicated to fudging literally every roll. That's kind of cool. I like that. Bolt has already funded on Kickstarter, and it's bolstered by a huge library of indie hacks and setting adaptations.
Yeah, there's all these indie hacks.
from high fantasy to climate punk sci-fi to the inevitable Star Wars ripoff. So if you want a moderate crunch RPG engine with a design team Asmodeus can't sack, check out Bolt. Available for pre-order on Metal Weave Games for $35 USD or $35 USD or $10 USD. I'm going to have to figure out what that... I'm guessing that's on purpose.
Who knows?
Who knows? Well, I
mean, I maybe that's book or PDF.
I assume Ajay does. You could ask him.
Hey, look, we just read what's in front of us, okay?
He's on Twitter. Go right ahead. Get at him. All right, so those are our announcement masteries, and without further ado, I think we should get on with the show. What do you think, John?
I think that would, you know, probably be good. That is sort of what we're here to do.
Yep, absolutely. So, let's see. We finished reading the 2003 RPG, Marvel Universe Roleplaying, just a couple hours ago in my case, and are ready to talk about it. This is a weird one. It's dedicated to being absolutely diceless, so which means it's primarily a resource allocation and management system.
Now, when I first heard that this was a diceless system, I don't have any preconceptions on what diceless really means outside of, you know, no dice. So I wasn't sure how they were going to handle that, if it was just going to all be, you know, a lot of narrative tricks or things like that. And then when I heard resource management, when you told me that, I was like, oh, okay, I guess that could be interesting. Because, for, I mean, I play a lot of, you know, very boring Euro board games and worker placement and stuff.
Heck
and
yeah.
I was thinking along the lines of like, oh, you only have a certain amount of, you know, options of things you can do. And it's like, oh, you can do like one of them or put your thing over here and do that one or whatever it happens to be. But instead, it's much worse. It's, whoa, good Lord, much worse.
Well, this is one of the two games in my head that I think of when people say diceless RPGs. Now, there are a lot of diceless role-playing games. Whether usually it's just that they use another randomization option. Neumannon used dominoes. We've seen several that use dice. You've written one that uses cards and a jack in the box.
Yes, instead there of dice, even... they use dice.
Sorry. but what I meant to get at is that there's actually even another Marvel game that doesn't use dice as its main determining factor. The second one published by TSR was a card-based game.
Yeah, I know there... I've seen at least, I want to say, two other Marvel role-playing games. And
oh, I mentioned it in the intro, but there are four.
Yeah, but I haven't read the other one.
Yeah, you and I have both read at least two.
Yes.
I can't speak... This is the third of four. The first one is probably the most famous, the old Marvel Superheroes role-playing, an old TSR box set game. It had the phase rip system to it and about a million powers and books and everything. It was moderately successful. The second one is in the Saga engine, just like one of the Star Wars role-playing games is from the late life of TSR. It's card-based, but I know very, very little about it because I've never actually seen a copy. This is the third, and then around 2013, a fourth attempt was made at making a Marvel RPG that folded almost as quickly as this one did in about a year.
Yeah, and I think that's the other one I've seen. Mm-hmm. So the card one is the one that I have yet to check out.
Yeah, and much like the Star Wars Saga edition, you'll have a tough time locating it outside of PDFs.
Meh.
They just sold out really well, and they usually at least Star Wars Saga, I don't own a copy, but I've seen it, and the production values are really nice and high, so it's not surprising that it's hard to find nowadays.
Oh, that's interesting, because I'm real nice and high.
That's not true at all.
No,
well,
it's
half
not.
True. You are fairly nice.
Yeah, I am real nice.
So, like John was saying, this game is not what you expect when you come into it. It is, what I was really getting at way, way back in the beginning was the two games I think of as diceless are this and Amber Diceless, both of which kind of work in similar fashion. You get a number of things that you assign out to various parts of your character stats, and then the winner of any given clash or challenge is just the person with the higher number that they allocated this turn. So you can voluntarily lose in order to win in other areas.
Yes. And there is, in the beginning of this book, anytime you do something different from whatever the norm is, they of course want to tell you like, oh, we're not like those other role-playing games. We do things a little differently around here.
Oh boy, yeah.
And
yeah, it's
this book is like, oh, don't worry about all those complicated dice rules. This is real simple, and man, fuck them. They are liars and thieves.
Yeah. It does start out with a, like, this ain't your grandma's role-playing game, because we've decided to do away with all the messy randomness and replace it with a simple, oh, it's so clean, it's so easy to use, and then you read it and you're just like, this is complex, and not only is it complex, but it doesn't work. It doesn't work as well as it ought to.
No, the amount of math that went into this diceless game was far more than I thought there would be. Again, for some reason, I thought going in, this was going to be much more focused on narrative play. Because anytime I think of something being diceless, I think it's supposed to be, oh, we don't want randomization as much as we want story. And instead it was, no, we just want, you know, fixed numbers, but still a lot of dumb nonsense that goes into everything you do.
There's parts of it that I understand at least what they were, like, going for. Because one of the core elements of this game is that they really tried to work in as much comic book as they could get away with. So individual scenes in the narrative are referred to as panels. A collection of panels is an issue. That kind of stuff. We've seen that in other comic book games that we've talked about before. But a panel in this game has a very discrete and functional meaning to it. It's an opportunity for you to spend your stones being the resource that you allocate in a resource allocation game. And at the beginning of each panel, you regenerate some stones that you had spent in the previous panel.
Yeah.
So from turn to turn, you're seeing kind of an interchange of stones coming and going. And the initial example they give you is, you know, it's Cyclops having to blast open a wall or something. And it's him, they're like, okay, Cyclops has 9 stones at the ready to spend on things. He puts 5 of them into his powerful optic blast, his signature laser thing, and 4 more defense. And then he blows the fucking wall away. And I'm like, oh, that sounds rad. That's Marvel shit. Okay, I'm up to speed. Next round, he regenerates 3 of the 9 stones he spent. And I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. the Exalted 3rd Edition had they sort of solved an issue that they had with their resource mechanic of motes, in that you regened some every round as well. But in that game, you started with a giant fuck-off pool of it, and a lot of your abilities were very powerful and didn't cost a lot. In this game, though, it feels like you've got to spend a pretty decent amount every single panel if you want to get anything done. And unless you spend a lot of your opening resources, like character gen-wise, you aren't going to regen a lot, and you're just going to suck ass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a definitive problem. And the thing is that they use this as a measure of how tired your character is. Like, that's actually the point of the whole stone regeneration mechanic. One of my favorite examples in the book is of the character Black Cat cracking a safe. Now, when she goes in to do her safe cracking, she's like, okay, I have a lot of stones in thievery and in the relevant ability score that's connected to this and so on. So I could invest a lot of my resources and crack this safe open. But I'm really worried that if I invest too much in the safe, then if combat breaks out around me, I'll be too tired to participate. And so she instead goes, okay, I'll put 3 stones into this a turn, and I'll let the other players know it's going to take me like 6 panels to open this safe, so you guys have to defend me for 6 panels. And all I could think was, what does that look like in story terminology, where Black Cat, if she cracks a safe too hard, she gets pooped and can't fight?
I mean, honestly, even with Cyclops, I'm like, how many times have I ever seen in a comic, like, he optic blasts a sentinel, and then he gets real tired and sits down and is like, I'm sorry, I can't do that again. 1 blast a day for me. And Jean Grey's like, yeah, I know.
I absolutely get where you're coming from. One of the problems with Marvel heroes is that almost all of them simply have unlimited resources. And the ones that don't, their resources are just a source of drama for the story. So you have characters like Iron Man, who is always almost out of batteries so that you can have some narrative drama, or Spider-Man, who only runs out of web fluid when they need to do a story about how he makes it.
But the problem is, there's only, like, mechanics for being tired for throwing out your web fluid rather than running out of it. Because you'd be like, oh, man, I'm so sleepy now that I've, I don't know, swung twice in New York. And, like, you can still shoot it, but now you suck at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I get the idea. I understand what they were going for. I feel like it didn't apply the way they were hoping, or at least didn't come off the way they were hoping. Like, there's also a description of how many people it takes to fly a Shi'ar spaceship. And it's like, oh, they'll need to invest 60 stones a panel just to keep this thing going in a straight line, which is why you'll probably need dozens of crew members. And all I could think was like, what does that mean, that you have dozens of exhausted people constantly exhausted from flying a spaceship?
I guess. I mean, if you look at it and go, oh, we're trying to say we want the baseline level of competency to be whatever your regen is, because you're like, I can do that all day and never really get tired because I'll just get it back the next panel. Then
yeah, and the average among all the sample heroes is a regen rate of about 3 stones per turn if you're not injured.
But the problem with that is it really comes apart when you look at things that are like, oh, it's always based off of one of your stats, which is durability. With the option of maybe basing it off intelligence if you want to pay a little more. And the durability stat costs 3 times as much to increase, but it's going to be your best.
Yeah.
And it just... sure, you get some energy out of it, but if you want to play sort of normally, where you're like, oh, I'm a regular human or, you know, Marvel regular human, you'll probably have a 3 durability, which means
like
you
Daredevil
have
has that.
Like 9 stones around to spend, and you have 3 health.
Mm-hmm.
But for so many characters, they have like static defense numbers that you've got to beat, as well as, you know, they're going to attack you, so maybe you want to put some in your defense. There's so much stuff to do with your stones in any given round that if you're just trying to be like, oh, well, I'll only spend 3 a round, if you do that, you are not accomplishing anything unless you are doing a static, like, safe-cracking thing where you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. And notably, all of the examples follow this problem. Every example in the game is of a character blowing their fucking wad immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And then right at the point where the game would become immensely boring because everyone blew their load already, it just ends the example.
Yeah, it's like, these two people meet. Sabretooth throws all of his stones into an attack, and he went first. He immediately knocks out Cyclops, who can't do anything. Anyway, moving on, you're like, this is the most boring example I've ever seen, because both of them were like, I put all 9 stones into Optic Blast. I put 12 stones into attack. Well, Sabretooth went first, so you get fucked.
Right.
All right.
And even if you're in a situation where one of them doesn't automatically win, like one of them's like, I blow all of my stones on attack this round, I'm going to murder you. And the other one's like, no, because I put all of my stones into, I don't know, intangibility or something, so your attack goes right through me. Great, next round we look like Samurai Jack and the Scotsman after being on the bridge for 3 days.
Oh, yeah. Those are your options. Your options are, all right, you both blow your wad immediately and either knock each other out, or the more likely, whoever goes first knocks the other person out. Or if someone's like, I spend 10 on offense, I spend 10 on defense, we both have nothing, and so now we're throwing, like, 2 stone attacks at each other that don't do anything, and who gives a shit?
Yeah. Yeah, everything devolves into slap fighting. Now, there are a number of other abilities, as they're called in the game. Intelligence, strength, agility, speed, and durability. Durability informs your health stones. They're a one-to-one translation. And 3 times your health stones is the number of energy stones that your character has. That's the number that you can spend on things, as we spoke about earlier. Durability seems like it costs 3 times as much as all the others, which makes it far and away the most powerful one, because it informs your per-turn regeneration rate of ways to contribute. But you can also purchase a way for intelligence to be the stone the stone generator instead.
Yeah, now if you want to make intelligence your stone generator, you're gonna end up paying a little extra overall, probably, unless you were planning on going super heavy into durability, because when you choose to do intelligence, then it means instead of your intelligence being normal cost, the cost for it is now doubled, and durability is still 3 times.
Yeah.
But
so you're paying more.
Your intelligence, you only get twice your intelligence in stones to start, so you also have a lower max energy than you would on a comparable durability. The only big difference is your regen from durability is capped at your current health. So if I have 5 health, I regen 5 a turn because I have 5 durability. If someone hits me and I lose 2 health and now I have 3, I regen 3 a turn. But with the intelligence, you'll just regen your intelligence every time because there's no real way to zap your brain.
Yeah, you can't get hit in the smarts, so you never lose your starting pool of regen. So you'll notice that almost every one of the example characters in the game who is a top-tier Marvel hero has this ability and has like 15 red stones and regenerates somewhere in the 6 to 9 range, making them the most stable, most dependable people. And, you know, everyone's always made this joke about Marvel and DC, that DC's characters all have, like, complex backstories, and Marvel characters... Oh, no, it's DC characters
are rich... detectives versus scientists.
Scientists, exactly. All the DC characters are rich detectives. All the Marvel characters are millionaire scientists.
Yeah, and, I mean, it makes it so that the two most frightening people, which makes sense when you think about it are the Hulk and Mr. Fantastic. Because the Hulk has a super high durability, he's got ridiculously high base defense, so he's got, you know, a lot of energy incoming, and it's really hard to hurt him to get that down. And then Reed Richards just has an intelligence of 9, so he regens 9 every turn, so he can throw a lot of stones at whatever he's doing and not worry about it.
Right. So the basic mechanic of how the game operates is that your character sheet has a couple of, like, boxes in it. There's an action box, and there's a sort of prep box where you put your stones that you haven't spent yet. When you want to do something, let's say, for example, you would like to punch a person. This is using the ability Close Combat. You'll check your ability Close Combat first and see how many your action number. That's the number of stones that you can put in it based on that. So if you have a Close Combat rating of 5, you can put 5 stones in there.
And with Close Combat and several other actions that you can take, they come baseline with a bonus. So for Close Combat, when you pick that, you pick a one of your stats, and you decide, all right, this is how I close combat. So you could say, all right, I'm going to use strength because I'm a beater, or I'm going to use agility because I'm Spider-Man, or whatever it is. You're going to then be able to, because that is a bonus to it, if your close combat was 4, you'd normally be able to spend 4, but it comes with a bonus of whatever ability. So if you chose agility and you have 4 agility, you can also spend those 4. So you could spend a total of 8.
Yeah, now it's still spending 8. It's not that your agility is added as free stones out of nowhere. It just increases the maximum number of stones that you're allowed to invest in that one use of an action during your panel.
Mm-hmm.
Now, note that that isn't the case with every one of the actions that you can purchase in the game. Now, action is a fairly broad term in this. It describes everything you would think of as skills, combat abilities, superpowers, magic. All of those things are actions, and they're purchased as actions.
Yeah, so in the same way that you would get, say, your close combat or your social skills, you're also going to get things like flight and laser beams.
Mm-hmm, and they're costed as effectively the same. Some of the more expensive abilities to purchase in the game are not superpowers. They're just things like being good at inventing. So, I mean, I guess that's a superpower if you're Forge.
I mean, yeah, or, you know, Mr. Fantastic, or Dr. Doom, or any of the ones that actually invest in it.
Yeah, but I still don't think that's a superpower for Mr. Fantastic. He's not smart because of his powers. He's just ultra smart in general.
I mean,
right?
He has powers because he's super smart.
I thought he had powers because he's super smart, but also kind of dumb.
Well, he's super smart, but also an asshole is the big thing.
Not all of the powers that you can purchase are going to come with those stat mods. So even if you think they would make perfect sense for them to, like, take, for example, Cyclops' eye lasers. They do not come with any one of his stats added as a purchase ability. However, if you just want to shoot guns, they do. They come with an agility mod built in automatically.
Well, no. Range combat comes with a weapon modifier.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Sorry about that. It comes with a weapon modifier, which allows you to add the additional stones equivalent to whatever the modifier on your listed weapon from the item category is.
The weird thing with the weapon modifier, though, is that is added automatically, unlike a stat bonus.
Yeah, those are free stones out of nowhere. Now, that still ends up being the same point I was trying to make in the first place, which is that guns are better than Cyclops.
Pretty much, because Cyclops can shoot one big blast at 9 stones. Mm-hmm. Now, if I have a ranged combat of 5, I'm pretty decent at ranged combat. And I have a custom badass pistol. Mystique has this, a +4 pistol.
Right.
Sure, I can only put 5 stones in there, but I get 4 automatically, which means I can, for 5 stones, have the exact same level of attack as Cyclops' very best blast, and I spend 4 less, and once we've done that, he is now, like, maximum going to be able to shoot next turn a 3 blast, whereas I can, for 1 stone, shoot a 5. It is dumb.
Yeah, they did not think it through at all, and also it's way cheaper. Cyclops' Optic Blast, and characters in this game have a starting reserve of 40 white stones to spend, and they can be turned into red stones at a 1-3 rate. But don't worry about that. That's not really that important. Cyclops' Optic Blast costs 25 starting character points. 25 of 40. Because it's just very expensive to get your laser blast up to that level of damage. That gun skill that John was mentioning earlier, that would cost, I think, 9 stones.
Well, if you wanted
to get to 5th rank.
They didn't
do a very good job.
No, the 5 in ranged combat would cost you 3 stones.
Ah, there you go. It's even worse than I thought.
Yeah, now, the costs for things, there is a chart.
Mm-hmm.
The chart goes for a number 1 through 10, and it tells you how much it costs of your starting stones in order to do it. Now, right. It's very cheap, even all the way up to, like, a 6 or a 7 in something, because, like, having a 3 in something costs 1 white stone out of your 40. So it's right. fairly cheap as long as what you're getting is a baseline, like, cost level. So something like close combat, ranged combat, they have no modifiers. But if I want to get a power that's like, oh, I have flight, just a standard superhero ability, that is the action number plus 2 levels, which means whatever you want to buy it at, you're actually buying it at 2 higher for the cost. So if you wanted to get flight at a 6, normally it would cost you 4, but you're paying the 8 cost, which is 9.
Yeah, that sentence made a lot of sense, and I'm sure it confused nobody.
Yeah, and that's this game where I was like, go through, how do I do this? Oh, well, your 6 is 4, but if you want that, it's 8 for 9, and you're like, I don't, what did you, fucking game, goddammit?
I think my favorite thing about flight, by the way, is that they use the explanation of how cheap it is as a backfill explanation for why there are so many flying superheroes in the Marvel Universe.
Well, the weird thing is, it has like, oh, it's minus 1 to the cost level if it fits with your main power.
Yeah, yeah. Which ultimately just means you're just going to come up with some sort of convoluted excuse that of course it does. Or, if you're smart, you'll just say flight is my main power.
Yeah, and it really fits in with it.
Yeah.
I'm
Angel.
You know
what works great with, you know what works great with flight? Flying. The ability to fly. I'm Cannonball. I can fly. Also, I'm nigh invulnerable, but that's secondary. While I'm blasting. Let me just point that out. It's while I'm blasting. You can build powers this way, because for each power that you purchase, you can purchase all kinds of advantages and hindrances to that power that are going to increase or decrease the rank level at which you have to purchase it. So, for example, if you want to increase the range of it, you can increase it by 1 range band. And I think there are, 5 total range bands? You can increase it by 1 range band for raising the rank by 1. Similarly, if you want to make it so the power is out of control unless you have some kind of device, say, for example, Cyclops' famous visor, then that would reduce the cost by 2 ranks.
Yeah, now that's how you're going to get, you know, a power that is normally very expensive. You're going to have to almost certainly throw a disadvantage or two on there just to be able to really afford it at any reasonable rate. But if you want to do high-end weird nonsense, the advantages you can get where it adds like plus 5 or 6 to the level is things like adding the ability to use an ability bonus for something. So if I wanted to add in my agility as a bonus to my ranged combat so that I can use a weapon modifier and my agility, then that costs me plus 5 levels to whatever my ranged combat is.
I had a really hard time both of us have already made our characters for this game for the bonus content, largely because it was really important to being able to understand any of this.
Oh, yeah.
That one I had a hard time coming up with any reason you'd be willing to do that. Because at a certain point, you're like, okay, well, it adds 5 ranks I have to purchase. Why don't I just buy it 5 ranks higher? That'll also increase the number of dice I can spend in it by 5. I guess it's literally only in the situation where you're like, well, this is as high rank as I can get it. I'll now make it even more expensive so I can add my agility or something to it.
I mean, it's almost only useful if you're talking about I have a stat that is over 5. Because at that point you're like, okay, well, I can buy this at, let's say I've got an agility of 8. I'm ridiculously agile. You're like, all right, well, I'll buy this ability at 1 and then add 5 to it. So now it costs 4 stones for that total. And I have the ability to put 9 of my energy into it.
Yeah. Whereas don't worry too much. This is all sounding like complicated nonsense, but don't worry. We will sum it up.
In addition to your advantages and disadvantages that you can put on powers if you want to mess with your total allocated ability to do stuff, your 40 stones to spend. Also, the fact that they call everything in this a fucking stone is part of the reason it's so confusing.
Yeah, because there's multiple kinds of stones, and so you're constantly hearing things like, you put one of your stones of defense into your stones of energy category.
Yeah, because you have white and red stones, but white stones are health and red stones are energy, but also when you make a character, you have white stones in order to buy things, and red stones are 1/3 of a white stone.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, every character has to have, in addition, a challenge, and that is your standard disadvantage from an RPG where it'd be like, oh, I'm missing my eyes, I'm blind, or I've got some sort of chronic condition or a compulsion or whatever. And you have to pick at least one because they're like,
it's Marvel.
Yeah. They're like, every character has to have some flaw.
That's a Marvel thing. They've always said that their characters are flawed. Every single one of the Marvel characters has some problem that they can use as a hook for storytelling.
Oh yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are, whether it's, Tony Stark's alcoholism or just being a mutant in general, there's something going on.
Yeah, you've got a problem. There are just sort of easy things that you can use to pick up extra stones to spend, though. So, for example, if you're thinking of super simple characters where you wouldn't even understand what their flaw is, usually it's something like won't break the law or has some minor psychological restriction.
Oh, yeah.
In some cases, you're going to turn it into advantages anyway, like, I know Daredevil's is that he's deaf because that's listed right here. He's blind. Excuse me. I said the wrong word. I wouldn't even say that's really his disadvantage. His disadvantage is that he's painfully Catholic and he's constantly willing to hurt himself.
I mean, I would also put that in there.
Yeah.
The thing is, the stuff like, oh, lose a sense or having a minor disability or even like, you have restricted movement, like you're in a wheelchair, like Professor X. All of these are worth various amounts of stones, but they don't change anything mechanically. If I say, I'm blind, I can go ahead and say, okay, great. That doesn't change any of my abilities, doesn't change my stats. It's just, hey, I got 4 free stones for saying my character has something.
I think one of my favorite examples in here, there's one for inhuman appearance or looking non-human, and they give it to Mystique at 3, which is kind of funny because obviously that doesn't affect her in the slightest, but they also give it to Gambit at 2, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell they're talking about. It's because he's got those Black Slayer red eyes sometimes, right? Because there's all kinds of pictures of him where he doesn't have that.
Yeah, I mean, normally he is supposed to have weird red eyes, like, at all times.
No, he's got Black Slayer and red pupils. That's supposed to be his thing, which means that his inhuman looks and 2 extra stones can be defeated by, like, sunglasses.
Well, yeah, I mean, the sample character that they make in this when they're like, let's put it all together and make a character, is a mutant that has the Mystique level of not looking human, and then just bought shape-shifting it like 1 stone to go, oh, and then he can just look normal.
Right. I guess, ultimately we do have to take into account the era that this book is from, because I've seen renditions of Gambit where the red eyes thing is something, where he means business because he's turned his powers on.
Yeah, I do think I've seen stuff where it's like, ooh, he's charging, which means he's got red eyes.
Yeah. And to give you an idea of that, by the way, as a really quick aside, this is from around 2003, which means you're getting a lot of like Frank Quitely art.
God. The Morrison run on X-Men shows up a few times in this book, and God, that art is butt ugly.
It's challenging. Because you get some pictures of, like, classic, you know, the Cyclops you want to look at with the leather jacket and the yellow straps and all that. But then also there's some of those Morrison-era Cyclops where he's got, like, the puffy yellow half jacket and the turtleneck.
And just, like, 12 different X's on him.
Yeah, or my favorite picture of Wolverine I've ever seen, where he looks like a chubby little Greek dude doing kissy face. And if he didn't have the claws out, you'd have no idea who that is.
Yeah.
Because that's just Frank Quitely's Wolverine. There's a lot of character art in this where you're like, oh God, 2003. That's the most boring era for Loki, among other things.
But also, there are some real wide boys in this. There is a picture of Cyclops in here.
Oh yeah,
where
he looks
squashed. He is just like, good Lord, man, you're not. That's not even muscle anymore. You look like one of those stress balls where like goo comes through a like fish netting. It's just lumpy.
Yeah, no, he's got some serious chonk is what's happening, and I swear it's because that picture was stretched to fit.
And they also have a picture that is definitely not stretched to fit of Magneto that looks just as much like that. Where you're like, oh, good Lord, you're supposed to be like an old man, but you are wider than you are tall. What is going on? How is your superpower gains?
I think one of my favorite things to do while flipping, because there's a section in the middle of this book that's just, I mean, it's made by Marvel Comics directly. That's actually the publisher of this RPG. And there's a section in the middle that's just, hey, here's 40 current superheroes from the 2003 Marvel era. And it's really fun to go through and look at that list and just be like, oh gosh, let's see what was going on in comics in exactly 2003.
Hmm.
Why is Rogue wearing a red outfit? What's going on there? How come Thor has one golden arm? What is he on, Kit Quibi? I don't understand. What was going on in Thor's life at that time?
It's great. I love it.
It's just a good time. It's one of the most fun things you could do. Oh, but this is also the era of X-Force Mystique. So Mystique looks like she's just bedecked in guns and walkie-talkies.
Mm.
And Punisher, at this era, had Superman hair and a perfect nude bodysuit.
Mmm, delicious.
This is before they realized that if you dress him like a superhero, he looks ridiculous. He needs to be dressed like a pissed-off old guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the rules.
So, there are all of these things that you can spend your starting stones on. So you can get your powers at whatever levels you want. It's also essentially your skills. Mm-hmm. And they split them up, because they split magic off from your standard abilities.
Yeah, there are four
categories.
For some reason. Yeah, there are four. Magic's a category, which honestly, it absolutely should not be a category. It should have just been trappings. It should have been like, what's Doctor Strange have? I don't know, flight, teleportation, force blasts. Because if you purchase the stuff that Doctor Strange has, you get everyone else's powers too.
Yeah.
And that seems to just be how magic works. If you purchase the base level power that Doctor Strange has, it comes with like time alteration and force blasts and flight and teleportation and force fields and invisibility. And it's cheap. It costs the same as purchasing like super invention.
Yeah, mastery of magic is only a +2 to your level, which makes it the same as just getting flight. But
yeah,
you get force blasts, a static all the time on magic defense, so if someone else tries to cast a spell on you, you get auto defense, you get illusions, you get the ability to travel, you get the ability to do magic research as a skill, you get
all of these things. You have to buy it before you can buy the rest of the magic skills, because there are three other magic abilities, enhanced magic travel, enchantment, and summoning. Oh, I'm sorry, necromancy, not enchantment. Summoning is weird because it gets more page space dedicated to it than any other ability in this whole game, and yet I can't name a Marvel summoner. That isn't just a fiat bad guy. I mean, yeah, Shuma Gorath can open up a portal and drop out many angled ones or whatever the fuck, but that's not the kind of shit you need to stat out.
No, I mean, Dormammu summoning in the Mindless Ones isn't really something where you're like, ah, yes, his famous power of summoning. It's mostly just, ah, yes, his goons.
Yeah, he's just like an Extinction Event level villain. His deal is just that he can summon his goons instead of having them arrive via a nearby car with, like, the villain's logo on it or something. But it gets so much page space, and eventually they try to justify it by being like, well, actually, Doctor Strange is a competent summoner. It's just that every time you hear him say, like, you know, by the hoary host of Hoggoth or whatever, he's invoking the power of Hoggoth. That's summoning.
I mean, the example they give is him just being like, oh, part of summoning is also the binding of whatever you summon. So someone else summoned a thing, and he binds it with his summoning.
That's true. There are two examples given of summoning mechanics, both Doctor Strange stuff. One of them is some villain, probably Mephisto or Blackheart or something, summoned a demon, and so he summons a counter demon to fight that demon while he goes off to fight the guy who summoned the demon, which feels like a colossal waste of time and resources.
No, he just uses his summoning to bind
fighting someone it. And using the Crimson Bands of Sidorak to hold them in place. He just evokes Sidorak, whose whole deal, I guess, is crimson bands that hold people in place and giving gems to Juggernaut.
Oh yeah, well his whole thing is red.
Yeah. Now in the power list, this is something I thought was really weird. In the power list, there are a weird mix between generic powers and exceptionally specific. It's obvious who they took this from. Powers. So for example, Iceman, Storm, Human Torch, and a few other characters all have the same power. Mastery. They just have different elements for it, but it's the same power. By the same token, Havoc and Cyclops have the same power. Force Blasts. You can build Force Blasts to do just about anything, because you can attach all kinds of riders to them with the advantage and disadvantage system. But, for some reason, Jubilee's Fireworks are their own thing.
Which is so weird that they were like, well, we have a power for shooting blasts of stuff. We should also make one that's just fireworks.
What? And then they even tell us that the difference with firework power is if you fire off your fireworks and the enemies run away, you can go over there and get your fireworks again and have those points back. That's the difference. But they couldn't just build that as a rider into the Force Blast ability. By the same token, Scarlet Witch's Hex Blasts are their own whole fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
For no reason. They're just Force Blasts that have a chaos effect when they hit, so they might do something at random. Easily converted into a one-sentence rider attached to the Force Blast engine. They didn't because Scarlet Witch's power is famous.
Yeah. And there, you see this in the last category of stuff you get, which is instead of abilities or magic, it's just modifiers. And mm-hmm. Some of them, it makes sense. Like if you go, I have an adamantium skeleton, there's no sliding scale of skeleton. It just costs me 3 stones and I have a skeleton. Same thing with Blob's immovability. 3 white stones, you're immovable. But then you have animal senses. So, basically Wolverine or Sabretooth's ability to smell or hear things in a heightened fashion. It's the same thing. You buy it up for a modifier number, but for some reason this is not a power. It's
the weirdest thing. I would say one of the weirdest notable things in this book is that they took this, there's this section just called modifiers that's supposed to be static qualities. It's not. There's powers in there for no good reason. But also, they fully took Wolverine and parted him out into this quality section, this modifier section.
Oh yeah, the first 4 powers in here are all Wolverine stuff, and then you go a little farther and find his last power.
Yeah, all of his powers are in this section instead. I don't know why, but they just took him apart and stuck those bits here instead. And Blob's power for immovability is here, but Juggernaut's power for unstoppability is a regular power.
Yeah. For some reason, almost like healing factor is a modifier and not just a power you have.
Yeah, and so is even better healing factor, which is a different modifier you could purchase. I don't know why these are 2 different categories.
There is
a 4th, by the way. Power armor is more or less an additional category of powers or of abilities that you can purchase.
Power armor, God. Okay, you know what?
Time to break the game.
power armor because, of course, they're like, oh, well, we need to represent that for the characters like, you know, Tony Stark or War Machine that have a suit of armor, because if you're like, oh, I'm walking around as Tony Stark, you're not going to have access to all of the powers you would if you're in your Iron Man suit. Okay, sure. So you have to build the suit. The suit itself has a lot of things that you have to buy as far as stats go. So, like, you can have a thing where, like, oh, I'm a one strength guy, but I bought, you know, five strength for my power armor. Great.
Uh-huh.
It's cheaper than it would be for buying your stats as a person, because they're like, well, you have to make a person and then you have to make power armor. So, you know, whatever stats you buy for power armor, it's half as expensive as it would be for buying them as a human.
Yeah, sure. Which obviously their thought when they were doing this was, oh, you know, it's not like T'Challa is a total scrub outside of his suit, so he'll probably invest heavily in being a badass in and out of the Black Panther armor.
Yeah, and I mean, you also are going to invest pretty heavily in, say, you know, Tony Stark's going to have a very high intelligence. He's going to have, you know, basically twos and threes in most of his other things. He's fairly competent. He's going to have skills that he's going to want to buy. So even though he doesn't have, like, superpowers that you're spending on him, you're still going to make a character, and then you have to make the armor, and you have to buy these stats up, because if you were like, my strength is three, but I have an arm, or my armor's strength is one, I'm weaker in my armor.
Yeah. So, but here's the problem with this, all in all. Oh, and there's one more thing about it that's really neat, which is there's a big list of powers you can purchase that are just purchased at discounts if they're in power armor. Things like tendrils or illusion projection. I don't know why, but that's one of them. Energy blasts, ranged combat can all be purchased at an advantageous cost if you're in any suit of power armor at all.
Yeah, and they're trying to say, okay, we're going to give you a little bit of a benefit because it is possible to catch you out. Like, you can't ever catch Cyclops without him having eye beams, but if you catch Tony Stark, he doesn't have repulsor blasts normally. So they're like, we'll give you a discount.
Yeah, and I guess another part of the idea is that they're trying to drive the narrative of what Power Armor characters usually look like. They, you know, you're War Machine. They've got guns all over them, and they can fly. Like, that's basically the point of the Power Armor character. So they're like, well, it'll drive the narrative by giving you a reward for building like one of those. But there's a point where it falls apart, and that point is robots.
God damn it. I was reading the Power Armor section, and I went, oh, that's pretty interesting. It's neat that they give you some discounts. You know, if you were building, I'm a regular guy who then, like, Tony Stark gave armor to, you'd have a lot of extra points because you wouldn't have to spend it on yourself. Cool. But then you get to Robot, and Robot is just, you build a character the same way you would power armor, but that's your character.
Yep. Which means you build a character where all the stats are half off, and they get a suite of bonus powers that they can choose from at lower costs, and that's it. There no penalties, no moral. Everyone loses.
Yeah, if you want a character to
day,
be,
sir.
If you want a character to be good, make them a robot and then just do whatever you were going to do anyway.
Yeah, and don't worry about it. There's precedent. I mean, ultimately, you could just say that you're any one of the number of robot versions of regular characters that are common throughout the Marvel Universe. Perhaps you're the Mighty Vision, or that one Wolverine robot that's always been around.
I mean, the fact that they say in Power Armor that they're like, oh, you can technically have other powers that aren't listed here, that's the main problem. If they had said Power Armor is only available to take, like, these lists of powers, you'd at least be limited in what you could make as a robot, but you're not. If you want to just be like, what are you? Oh, I wanted to make, I don't know, Cyclops, but a robot. Oh, I'm better than Cyclops then.
Nothing stopping you. Yeah, you're better than Cyclops because your stats cost half as much.
And also, I can choose Laser Blast and it cost me less than it did for Cyclops, so go fuck yourself, my dude.
Yep. And there's literally nothing stopping you from doing, like, you could make a Doctor Strange robot who is a better magician than Doctor Strange because you simply have more dice, or, excuse me, more stones to allocate.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Do they just think no one would want to play as robots?
I don't know, because Robot is put in there as like a paragraph right at the end of Power Armor, and I'm like, oh, someone did not think that through at all. They just went, oh shit, we have to put robots in here because there are characters that are robots. Okay, sure, whatever. If you're a robot, just build them like you would Power Armor, and did not think about it.
yeah, it's a really weird misstep.
Which is odd, because they have the bionic and cybernetic enhancement as well in the whole Power Armor thing, and they just say, oh, if you lost that, it doesn't matter, you're just like, that's what it is based on whatever your ability is. So if you buy a 4 in strength and you want to say it's because you have a cyber arm, that's what you have, you don't have to worry about it. And instead of doing that for Robot, they decided to make it better.
Yeah, it's weird. You get the idea that they had that thought because of, you know, like Winter Soldier or something, where they're like, well, does he need to buy a bunch of points in robot arm? No, he just bought extra strength and says it's because of a robot arm.
Yeah.
It's fine. It doesn't matter. Now, after all of that, we get into a couple more baffling sections. First of all, there are the two examples of play and combat. These are the longest form examples of play in the game. One of them features a battle between, I believe it's Jean Grey and Cyclops versus Mystique and Sabretooth.
Mm-hmm.
And in this one, it just tells us that ranged combat is better than melee combat. Don't build for melee combat.
Well, I mean, that's what it tells us for Blob versus Gambit as well.
Yeah. Well, that one's even worse. Let's start with that one. The Blob and Gambit fight, it starts with, what if Gambit tried to go up and punch the Blob? He uses his dismal melee attack abilities, and Blob gets to just take no damage from that and beat him into the dirt immediately.
Yeah, it's like, what happens? Oh, he throws a card in melee range, and ow, it kind of hurts. Anyway, the Blob punches him for like 27, and he explodes. And by that, I mean, is knocked unconscious.
It's because the Blob has an incredible amount of toughness and an incredible amount of durability. He's the Blob, so he's got like, I think he has like a 9 durability and a 27 energy stones to spend. He's got a lot of, that's his one thing, is stick-to-itiveness.
Yeah, I wish he had that. The highest durability in this game is an 8 for Silver Surfer.
Oh, very good. Well, I think it's his health stones that are unusually high. He purchased a lot of toughness, not health stones, excuse me, energy stones. God, this game. But anyway, let's go on to the what happens if it's ranged combat. Okay, well, in this case, Gambit throws a bunch of cards at him, and he invests a couple of stones in defense. Then, because it's not like old Fred J. Dukes doesn't have ranged attacks, he picks up a chair and throws it at Gambit. But Gambit takes his 2 stones of defense, and it easily defeats this 14-stone thrown attack coming in by diving behind a dumpster.
To be fair, no.
Yeah. No. The Please, first tell one the story, is, then.
He tries to swing close combat, but can't get next to him because he spends
Oh, right.
12 stones on close combat, but Gambit spends like 2 to walk backwards and Blob can't catch up, which at least sort of makes sense for the narrative to be like, Blob's very slow and Gambit is quick.
Mm-hmm.
But when he throws the chair, it's like, oh yeah, he throws it with 3 stones. Okay. Gambit has 2 stones of defense, but he went first and jumped behind a dumpster, which gave him +2 situational defense. And you think, okay, a situational defense modifier, that's fine, he'll not get hit by it. But then, right afterwards, it says, oh, and by the way, it doesn't matter because even if he had hit him, he's behind a dumpster, so it would just hit the dumpster.
Right, which means that you can just narrate your way out of problems by investing any amount of stones, and then just being like, well, if I'm faster than you, then I just say I hide behind something, and it doesn't matter what you roll, my no amount of defense dice beats your any amount of offense dice.
Yeah, you don't have to put anything into defense, you just have to go, alright, I do a max attack on you, and then I say that I don't know, walk behind a wall.
Yeah. And they're like, okay, well, I guess it's my turn. Can I invest in walking around the wall and seeing you on the other side? No, apparently not, because that's not mentioned in the example. You have to throw your chair at the wall and watch it not do anything.
Well, the problem is, you have to invest before you see whatever anyone's doing. The resolution system in this is just gambling and betting that you know what they're going to do, because right. you're going to put your stones into something. They're going to put theirs into something. And it's why you can do something like Gambit throws a card and he put like one stone in speed to walk away. And Blob didn't put any stones into speed, so he just swings at air.
Right.
Okay.
I guess the idea is supposed to be that the example is of a fight against an exceptionally stupid Blob, who, even though he has like 14 stones to throw around, never invests any in chasing anybody.
Yeah. It. I mean, he is... You can only invest as many stones in something as you have for the limit. His speed is one, so it's not like he's exactly going to catch up to anyone very quickly.
No, and I get that. And, you know, it's kind of thematic for the Blob to be like, I'm not the fastest, I mostly just stand in place. Except that's never been the way he's portrayed in comics. He's usually flying through the air for some reason.
Well, the big thing with this is Gambit throws a card, and it fucking blasts, like, 4 out of the 6 health that he has away. And you're like,
yeah,
that's not
bullshit.
Ever happened.
Yeah, that's the thing. They're like, Blob's 4 stones and toughness don't even begin to matter here. And I'm like, then he didn't invest the right amount of stones and toughness. He's the Blob.
Yeah.
The point of the Blob is that it's hard to put him down.
Yeah, the highest toughness in the game is the Hulk at 8, which means he just gets 8 defense that he doesn't have to pay for. But if you beat that and he didn't put any stones in defense, then I can take a pistol and shoot the Hulk and be like, ha ha, that hurt you a lot.
Yeah, yeah. The other example is not only weird, but also pretty much out of character. It plays through pretty much straightforward. First of all, it again shows what happens if Sabretooth gets the drop on Cyclops in close combat. But right away, it jumps to this ranged version where... Jean Grey just mind controls Sabretooth. She just beats him with a mind control roll, and now he's mind controlled. And next round, she just maintains the mind control on him, and then also mind controls Mystique. Fight over.
Yeah, they really show that they're like, oh yeah, here's several instances of someone gets into a fight, and ooh, you gotta beat these numbers, and man, you might get punched or whatever, and then they go... Anyway, Jean Grey says you're out of the fight and you're out of the fight and there's nothing you can do about it. You can't even spend stones to try and stop me.
There's no attempt to break the mind control. There's no need to reestablish it. It's one stone per turn to maintain it. And if you maintain it, that character just fucking stands there.
Yep. I mean, I guess if you really want to be like, yeah, man, fuck it. Professor X shows up and just goes, nah, all of you stop. Sure.
Sure. That's in character for Professor X. Jean never does that.
Oh, I know. It's very dumb that they put that as part of telepathy. The power is also mesmerism.
Well, yeah. The telekinesis and telepathy power sets both come with a lot of powers that are very clearly just stuff that Jean Grey can do. Like, they didn't think too much about if that's a general power that would make sense. They were just like, list every one of the stunts we've ever seen Jean Grey do. Put them in telepathy and telekinesis, because she has the powers of telepathy and telekinesis. And, you know, when you establish, when you look at them closely, you're like, a lot of those aren't either of those things. You've decided to backdate and say that because Jean Grey has telepathy and telekinesis, those powers just have a million applications, instead of acknowledging, as you should have, that she actually has a lot of powers in this engine.
Nope.
Don't worry about it. We just mashed them all together. Here's a whole power that's just called stuff Psylocke can do. Actually, that's not true. Psylocke's power is in here. It's called Psy Weaponry, and it doesn't do anything that Psylocke's power does other than summoning weapons.
I can't get over the fact that telepathy is also ridiculously cheap. It is costed at straight action number, no penalty to, like, you have to pay more. And that's it. That's all. You can just do that.
Yeah, considering that fireworks, for example, the Jubilee power is rank +2 base. It doesn't make it. I don't know what the hell they were doing.
It's
anyway, John,
just bad.
Before we get into the end, and I know we're really close to being done here, I know you definitely wanted to mention the gear system a little bit.
Yeah. So in this game... Wealth is also one of the things you can buy. So you can get a wealth score in case you're like, oh, I want to be, you know, Tony Stark or Doctor Doom or any of the rich fellows.
Every single Marvel character, yeah.
It is fairly cheap to get a lot of money. You can be a millionaire for like a couple white stones at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps you in power armor. You get a little extra stones to spend if you have money. But also, there is a gear list that has a price tag for it for certain things. Now, items, as we mentioned with the whole weapon modifier thing in range combat, whatever their modifier is, just gets added without you having to spend anything. So if I have a baseball bat, it has a weapon modifier of +1. So if I do a close combat with a baseball bat, I just get a free stone on my attack. Great.
Mm-hmm.
You can get a custom rifle or a custom pistol for like +4 to your attack. And there's no damage stat in this game. There's just how accurate it is. And then occasionally things will have like this does x2 damage or x3. Base pistol comes with x2 damage.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it as a +4. I don't know how much more I can drive home the fact that you don't have to like spend character resources on this. You can just go, oh, instead of having to spend, you know, 15, 20 stones on a laser blast, I have a laser gun and it's better than a laser blast and it didn't cost me anything.
Yeah, and I guess the idea is supposed to be that it can get taken away from you.
I guess.
I assume, but then again, it doesn't cost anything to use it. So the mechanic of I guess you could lose your pistol from time to time is pretty heavily balanced out by how much better it is, especially because to fire a laser blast, you're spending 9 stones. To fire a 9-stone shot out of a gun, it usually costs you 4 or 5.
Yeah, they don't have the cost for a lot of things in here. They do allow you to be like, oh, I'll spend white stones to get unique equipment. So if you wanted to be like, I've got, say, Green Goblin's glider, that would be something where you could spend stones on that and it would just be an equipment, but not just something you can buy normally. But like,
which is so weird, because you'd think you'd just make that a power and be like, oh yeah, my character is the Green Goblin, so one of his powers is flight, and the flight is represented by that glider thing.
Yeah, but no.
I guess because the idea is that you can take it away from him, but that doesn't make for very interesting narrative gameplay. It would be a lot simpler to be like, oh yeah, if you get knocked off it, you lose a turn of having the flight power, but obviously you're the Green Goblin, you're going to whistle and it's going to come flying back over.
Yeah. Now, the interesting thing here is an energy weapon, which if you get an energy weapon, it gives you an automatic 6 extra stones to whatever you're doing and has almost 3 times as much of the range as a regular gun. So if you're like, what are you? I am a dude with a laser gun. I'm the deadliest motherfucker around.
Yeah. Now, the question I have from that is, I'm pretty sure that Thor's hammer is indeed statted out in this game as an item that he has.
Yes. If you go to Thor, he has Mjolnir in his stat block.
Now, is the Silver Surfer's surfboard in the same way? Is it a statted out item, or is it just wrapped up in his powers?
For the Silver Surfer, I think they gave him a surfboard as equipment, and it just gives him +10 free stones of flight.
God, okay, sure. Yeah, you're right, there it is. Flight at 10+, it's indestructible, and it's psionically linked with his mind.
I mean, there's a lot of things in the game where you look at it and you're like, fuck, equipment is amazing. Captain America, his shield is a +6 equipment that you can use for either close combat, ranged combat, or defense. It's armor piercing, and it can hit multiple targets and return to the thrower.
Right.
So,
God,
whatever he wants to do, he gets an automatic +6 to it.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think we probably talked about as long as we possibly can about this weird game. We've gotten into the art. There's an adventure in the back, but I think we can probably skip over it and be happy. You want to get into your favorites and least favorites?
Let's do it.
Sure, John. Why don't you tell me what your favorite thing is about this game? Sorry, I'm looking at that picture of Wolverine again.
Oh, kissy face Wolverine.
He's your short king, John.
I believe you dropped this king.
Hey, buddy, you want to do makeouts? I am the Wolverine.
I'd say my favorite thing in this is the idea of the resource allocation instead of dice. I like the, like, you've got a pool of resources. You can shift them around to do however, like, whatever thing you want to do for that turn. That's a good idea of how to do a diceless game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Caveat.
Having it being a gambling. Well, you know what? I was going to think the same thing today. My favorite thing has my least favorite thing baked into it as well.
Yeah, sure.
But go ahead. What's your caveat?
Oh, I mean, the caveat is that this game sucks at it, but what is your favorite thing?
My favorite thing about this game is power creation. I think it's really neat the way that they were like, all right, you can take any power, add chunks to it, build hindrances into it, and so on, until it resembles the power of your favorite Marvel hero.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of clever, that they really thought it out. They have examples for almost everybody, with some hilarious failures where there's powers that are so obscure that they don't have any, they couldn't think of anyone to assign them to. Witchcraft is one of the spell types you can buy in this game, and the example is of a made-up new character because there aren't Marvel witches, really. So, I mean, I really like that. I think it's really neat that they went out of their way to try and build it so that you can build complex characters with complex power sets from a kind of toolkit assembly stage. I like that. What's your least favorite thing?
Oh, my least favorite thing in this is that reading through this with any amount of a critical eye towards, like, math at all or how things can shake out, you come to the conclusion of there are certain things that are winners or losers in this game. I mean, we talked about equipment versus buying a ranged blast as your thing. There's also the intelligence as far as being able to use that for your, like, energy regen so it's not tied to your health. The auto defense stuff is so powerful and so necessary because if you're a person who's like, oh, I didn't buy any of the, like, auto dodge or toughness or anything that just gives me static defense, you are fucked immediately as soon as the game starts.
Yeah. Yeah, there's certain things where if you know to purchase them in advance, you're just going to be auto-winning forever.
Yeah, one might say there's too much system mastery involved in this.
Well, here's the thing that bothers me. You and I read this game over the past 2 weeks, and when we built our characters, we both built ludicrous power fantasy characters that do one thing perfectly and would blow this game world open. And it took us about 3 minutes to figure out how.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my test was, all right, every time I make a starting character, can they beat up the Hulk? And it's pretty easy to make a starting character that's like, yo, I clown on the Hulk all day.
Yeah, you just specialize. And then there's a bunch of leftover points that you can still spend on things. You're not supposed to, but it's very easy to build a way crazy, super ultra powerful character in this game. And it starts with robots. So I'm going to say my least favorite thing is a counterexample to the power creation system. And I talked about it earlier, but I think it's the whole sticking the landing thing where half of these powers are cool kind of generic block powers that you could use to build a character that you'd recognize when you see them. If you see something like stretchiness, you're like, okay, I know about Mr. Fantastic, but I could also use this to build Kamala or I could use it to build maybe Omega Red or whatever, just by saying, oh, his tentacles come out as a stretch factor.
Instead of using the tentacle power.
I know there's a tentacle power, but I was reaching. Don't mind me.
That's fine.
But then on the other hand, you see a ton of powers in here that should have been rolled into those and just aren't. Like, for whatever reason, they were just like, I don't know, let's take Jubilee's power and make it its own thing. Let's take Juggernaut's unstoppability and make it its own whole power that only Juggernaut has and only makes sense if you're building Juggernaut. And yeah. You're like, why? Why would you do it? I mean, who do you think is going to want to build their own character in this game? Because obviously there's a huge list of NPCs you could choose to pick and play as if you want to. Who's going to be like, I want to build my own character in this game, my own way? And that starts with Scarlet Witch's exact power. Like, it doesn't work that it should. These powers that are so hyper specific should have been boiled into the generic options and let you build your character your way. I understand why they did it. This is a licensed game and they want to flaunt the license.
Yeah.
But it makes that section clunky and weird and repetitive. There's a lot of things that are like, this is the same power again. It's just because a Scarlet Witch had it. Now it's here again.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's my least favorite thing. John, would you play this game?
The sad thing is, I would, but it would take a very good GM to sit me down and go, please do not ruin my game. Because I would immediately go, what do you do? I make a character that breaks the system. Sorry.
I mean, I feel like I don't have to make a character that breaks the system. It wouldn't be that tough to build a basic character in this game. The problem is that most of the NPCs that you're going to encounter are going to be better than you in the only way that matters if you try to build a generic character. It's an arms race of a game.
Yeah, the thing is, it starts out when you're building the character and it says your character probably isn't going to be as good or as strong as the established heroes. Like, you're not going to be able to make a starting character that's going to have as much, like, power and resources and whatnot as, say, like, you know, Thor or Storm or Spider-Man or whatever. And the problem is, you can look at that and go, well, I guess I gotta be a street-level garbage hero. Or you can go, well, fuck you, game. I'll make a character that does do that.
Yeah, I do one thing, and I do it very well. I built the fucking shoveler. But, like, yeah, you're right. You can't build a character that's as powerful as an established Marvel hero, and that's actually, honestly, a big fucking problem. It's why I wouldn't play this game. I have a general test for licensed games, which is, do they let you make the heroes that you like, or do they make you let a chumpy version of the heroes that you like, who may someday be as good as the heroes that you like? And if it's that second one, fuck that game. I don't want to play as Aragorn's crappy cousin.
Yeah,
that's a thing. I don't understand why people think that earn your fun is a superhero thing. Which superheroes are we seeing who vastly increase their power set over the course of their lifespan? Captain America pretty much was Captain America from the first issue.
Yeah, it's a thing in hero games where I think the problem is everyone looks at it as we need to have something to spend XP on because XP is a part of role-playing games. So they're like, all right, well, you're going to have to spend the XP in this game is called lines. Once you spend 10 lines on something, then you can increase its number by one. And yeah. I just don't care.
Superhero games. It doesn't hurt superhero games to have some kind of growth mechanic built into them, but it works a lot better if it's a broad growth mechanic. If you're like, oh, my character gets a bunch of XP and now can play as the extreme 90s version of himself, as opposed to, I don't know, Cyclops' optic blast hits 10% harder now. It used to be the best laser in the world, and now it's, I don't know, 10% better.
I mean, or do it something like, all right, I'm Spider-Man. I've got web shooters. I spent XP. My web shooter can now do web balls that I can shoot at people to, like, do blunt damage to them. All right, now I can use it to make a parachute. Like, just add in tricks and ways to use your powers in different ways.
Heck, the first Marvel game had that. It was called Stunts. You could build power stunts that let you do cool shit with your powers. But yeah, this idea that you need to force an XP mechanic, and that the fact that you forced an XP mechanic then comes with this corollary that your starting character is probably going to be kind of shitty compared to the heroes you know and love. And I'm like, no, I want to play as the heroes I know and love, or their equivalents.
Yeah, but I never want to play the actual thing. Like, I don't want to be Spider-Man or Captain America. I want to play a cool hero in that world. But instead, I don't get to play a cool hero in that world. I get to play some chump that is also around these actual heroes.
Well, I think a great example that we see in modern game or modern comic design is Kamala. If you look at Ms. Marvel, she is absolutely a complete fanboy about Marvel characters. Like, she geeks out whenever she gets to meet them. She idolizes all of them, and she thinks she's trying to live up to their legacy by training and developing. But she is already an established absolute badass.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put her up against Green Goblin, no problem. She's doing fine. She has all of her powers already. It's not like she's going to get stretchier or something. So that's the way you build them. If you want your character to be idolizing the current crop of heroes, that's fine. They don't need to be chumpier.
Exactly.
So that's why I wouldn't play this. Even though it isn't really the case, you can easily specialize your character and build a ludicrous god monster.
Yep.
And there you go. We have one yes and one no to who would play this game, and that should wrap us up. Why don't we get this one through quickly, because it's already an hour and 20. Hey, folks, go to our Patreon, patreon.com/systemmastery. There you can support us at the $1 level to unlock bonus content right here on this show, where we make characters in the book we just reviewed. And you're going to get to hear some dumb ones this time, I assure you. You can also support us at the $2 and $5 levels to unlock yet more podcasts than that. There are so many podcasts.
That's right, we've got a ton of content. Go over to patreon.com/systemmastery. Even if you don't want to listen to it, I don't care, man. Help us out. Help,
give us some money.
Help a guy out. Give me a dollar.
There you go. Give us a dollar. That would be great. Also, we have a book coming out. I think it launches December 14th. It is already in stores as a pre-order now. It's called Dungeon Meister, and it is a book of nerd cocktail recipes.
Mm-hmm.
More role-playing game cocktail recipes. In the beginning, we had a whole bunch of like video game and Shadowrun jokes and stuff in there, and those were very carefully phased and edited out.
Yeah,
so it's mostly a big book of role-playing game cocktail recipes that we both really enjoyed writing. It was fun to write, and it'll be fun to make and fun to drink too.
Hooray!
Otherwise, thank you so much for listening. We'll see you real soon. Go find Dungeon Meister, and you all have a good one.